Do you ever feel like the agency business needs a little bit more optimism and maybe a few more fresh ideas? Welcome to The Immortal Life of Agencies. This is the podcast that spotlights the visionaries and changemakers who are shaping the future of our industry. Here we don't dwell on the doom and gloom. Instead, we celebrate the leaders who've been there, done that, and are happy to share what they've got right, as well as what they've got wrong. Each episode delivers short, punchy conversations with some of the biggest, boldest, and brightest minds in our world, along with practical takeaways you can put to work in your agency today. So if you're looking for stories of positivity and progress, you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. Joining me today is Nils Leonard, the creative co-founder of Uncommon Creative Studio. Now, this is an honest and raw conversation about what it means to matter as an individual, as a creative, as an agency, as a citizen of the world. So we talk about ambition. We talk about how many agencies and many people have a pretty broken relationship with success. We also touch on why it really isn't just about the work. It's about really moving the industry narrative forward. And ultimately, if your work can be evidence of your beliefs, then you're far more likely to be a successful business. As Nils puts it, every moment is a chance to do something different, to believe in yourself, and to achieve great things. And for a show about optimism, there's plenty to enjoy in this episode. So, Nils Leonard, welcome to the show.
Hello, Robin. Thanks for having me.
I am delighted to have you on the show, not least because, as is often the case when we have our prep conversations with our guests, ours went on into some interesting directions and a bunch of different avenues that we get chance to go down, which I'm now excited to have the opportunity to do that. So, yeah, thanks for making time, mate. I know how busy you are.
No, always. This will probably be nothing like that now, but let's try to do something interesting.
Let's talk about Uncommon. Let's talk about your journey. And particularly, I'm really interested in something you alluded to in our last conversation, just about some bigger picture stuff. So it's a lovely way you framed it. And I'm just going to play it straight back to you if that's okay. But big question, what exactly is Uncommon trying to change in the world?
Well, yeah, tiny question to start with.
Ease you in.
Well, I don't know if most people know this, but we had a weird side effect and advantage of being sued by my friend Martin Sorrell when we left Grey, was that we couldn't start immediately. We had a year and we were doing all sorts of other things in that year because we weren't able to just open. Legally, we weren't able to do that. So it forced us to literally retreat and really think about things. And I really became incredibly aware of how precious and what a privilege this moment was for me personally and for us, and started to really think, well, instead of just trying to make a quick buck and do it for myself in inverted commas, like, what does that really mean? And to try and start something that might actually be a dream and be new, actually, in the biggest sense of that word, and be what we call a reference point. And go with me on this. Someone asked me a very difficult question. I'm sure some of the people listening may have heard me speak to before, but I'll speak to why it haunted me. It was in a pitch and this person said, Nils, how do I go from being a brand that sells crap to people to being a brand that people wish existed? And I went off and thought about that question. It was a very cunning question to ask in a pitch. And I really thought about it. A brand that people wish existed, okay? Think about what that might be, who that might be. And then I stopped and I went, well, never mind you. How do I start a studio? Because it would probably be a studio, not an agency, that actually people in the real world, your wife, mother, lover, may know and understand and actually want, in a world where 75% of brands could disappear. So that was the aim. Now, I started to think about that and was like, well, there wasn't a Virgil before there was a Virgil and Off-White, and there wasn't Steve Jobs before there was Steve Jobs. And I'm not likening us to that. I'm just saying that in every category or in every sphere where you start to refer to people or things, there's been a moment where I think they've responded to the category and to the world around them, and they've used that to propel them. And so I stopped and I looked and I went, well, people fucking hate ads. They really do. And if you disagree with me, there's a button that just proves you wrong. And it was before AI, but looking at it, we were trying to create something of worth and something that was scarce. And all of the other lessons and quotes I had ringing, and I collect statements and I collect things that resonate with me, and it's a very healthy thing to do. But one of them was, make the world to believe in you and to pay heavily for the privilege, by Gilbert and Jordan. I love that quote.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Well, it is, but it's also beautiful because it's the polar opposite of the fucking ad industry.
Right.
The ad industry's quote would be, make the client to want you and to just about accept having you around for whatever they tell you you're worth.
Doesn't quite have the same ring to it, does it?
No. And I thought, what if the one go we got and the experiment we could create was where we started a company that was so desired, we could charge what we thought we needed to, that was so powerful it didn't need other people to make its best work, that created work that was so important and so remarkable that it would be referred to in years.
This is back to being a reference, right?
Being a reference point. And that's the dream. And the dream wasn't, how do we get through the first week? Of course, that was on my mind and in the pit of my stomach. But the dream was, how does somebody, probably way outside this industry, talk about us in 15 years? When is someone going to dust off the weird book in whatever the future of Magma is and go, I remember those guys? Or all the other modern reference points. I'm talking about classical implications. I'm talking about 15 to 20 years. Someone dusts something off and go, do you see these guys? They were onto something. That was interesting. And did you see that thing they did? Because for a brief moment, that mattered. That's the dream. That was the dream. And everything really has been in service of that.
I think there's something delightfully un-British about this, because the British are going to collectively generalize, and I apologize for any British people listening who don't identify this, but we can be such dicks when it comes to ambition and backing ourselves.
Yeah.
And I know this from writing a book, kind of going through this journey of kind of becoming an author, and it's wonderful, and the book is ready, and it's going to come out in July, and I'm excited, and
congrats.
Don't worry, everybody, I will talk more about it, and. But it would never have occurred to me without some help to be banging down the door of certain media outlets saying, like, you need this book. It's much more kind of, oh, yeah, excuse me, I've done this thing. Like, maybe would you perhaps be interested in it? And I'm not necessarily representative of the British public, but I think we do have that streak of aiming low.
We have a broken relationship with success and ambition. And I think we have a broken relationship with real commercial art. So in the UK, you know, when you go, oh, Channel 4, it's like edgy, it's cool. It's like we have a real respect for niche and edgy acts of creativity. I think in the States or just elsewhere in the world, there is a real appreciation and respect for the most populist versions of creativity. It's far harder, I would argue, to make Finding Nemo than it is to make some provocative, edgy docudrama on Channel 4. And I think the real masters of this, the Matt and Trays of the world, are where you're provoking and you're on the edges of culture and what's responsible and what's safe and what's okay. But you're really doing stuff that everybody's watching. And I think that's the magic bit. That's the incredible part of creativity that the UK just doesn't really understand. And by the way, is allergic to. And I wonder if it's a get out, because I just look at all of that and I'm the most inspired by work like that. I look at Matt and Trey as the proxy creative directors for the world.
I mean, that's such a lovely way of putting it.
Well, they are. And I look at Sacha Baron Cohen, by the way, who I think has been massively underrated as a cultural creative, and what he's done and the questions he's asked of the world, by the way, all while making us laugh and gasp and sit on the edge of our seats. And I just sort of think these people and this stuff is super interesting to me. So I look at the UK, and by the way, when we started at Grey, which just was where I was before Uncommon, it's just worth noting, I learned lots from a guy called Tor Mirren, who's now the CMO of Apple globally. But Tor was the CCO of Grey New York, and the Americans have a far less problematic relationship with PR, with storytelling, with humility, with ambition. And Tor would regularly be banging his own drum internally in the network, but also out in the world. And I saw the transformative effect that had on the business. And I was like, I'm just going to do that. And I started, and people fucking hated it. People hated it, man. People fucking hated it. And there's this other bit of bullshit, by the way, Robin, that people love to say, which is, we love anything creative and new, and we love change. We really don't, particularly in the UK. I think the creative landscape is a gang in the corner of a playground that like it the way it's always been. And I think they like that. And I think at the time we were seen as arrogant. And I think there's a difference between arrogant and believing that you have a very limited period to matter and you're not going to fuck around.
It's interesting in context, isn't it? It's certainly a very accepted sort of descriptor of greatness in sporting fields. And I don't know how they say this in other cultures, but again, British reference point, because it's an easy one for me to reach for. You talk about an incredible footballer having just that little bit of arrogance about their game. I think you see that in a lot of elite sports people. So I don't know much about Michael Jordan, but again, I think he's been portrayed as someone that's got a real intensity about, you know.
Well, they use the word swagger, don't they?
Yeah, but swagger, again, it's funny. Swagger's one of those, I like the word swagger. And I think it doesn't come with that connotation of arrogance for me. But if it did, it would be a very much it's a self-belief version of arrogance rather than a sort of bumptiousness, you know?
I've always believed. There's a very British thing, which is let the work do the talking. But if I wanted my company to be important, how could I possibly leave it to just my work in an age where everything we do is discussed? Virgil Abloh didn't let his t-shirts do the talking. He let the concept of the brand do the talking. He let his publishing do the talking. His narrative, it went through everything. And kind of go with me on this. I was like, the word I think's gone missing is conviction. I didn't want people to talk about us just to talk about us. I wanted them to talk about our mission and our impact and what we were trying to do and to see it. Robin, one of the things I'm very needy, like most creative people. One of the things I'm desperate to be seen to be doing is trying to matter, trying to do something that might move the partnerships we create in this industry and our narrative forwards. And I'm desperate that for the limited period of time where the studio is making what we're making, people don't miss that. And I think there is absolutely nothing wrong, provided you've really mechanized your vision, your mission, the work you're making. We're trying to put yourselves out there. And I think the world can see the difference between someone just banging a drum and someone banging a drum with a point to make and a point to prove. And I just wish more of us understood that. And so when I talk to some of the other startups and agencies that are opening, I think the world's moved on a bit, by the way, as well. But I look at a guy called James Cross, who runs Meanwhile up in Manchester. And he knows absolutely the power of banging his own drum, particularly with that from out of London. I just think we haven't got time. Have we got time to hope that the world notices us? How could we possibly give ourselves that disadvantage? I just think it's...
Well, I think there's definitely a connection between that as a sort of fearful, insecure version of talking yourself up, because frankly, if you don't, the sort of the deafening silence of your own soul becomes unbearable to carry around with you. So constantly make noise. So to distract yourself from that gaping void. But equally, as you...
Well, you have to remember though, Robin, when we started, dude, that, and this is the other side effect of it, we couldn't have a client, literally couldn't. I'd have been sued into prison. So all we had was our story. And of course, what that told me was, well, I really better think about this and it better be something I believe in. And what it, then the benefit of that and the time it took for us to do it forced us to come up with a story that wasn't just a way of describing an advert, was the way of describing a company, and it's out in 10 years' time. Now, that's interesting because in hindsight, that allows every market in the world to play a part in it. And it allows all our clients and all the other disciplines to play a part in it. But it forced us to tell a story devoid of clients or anything else. And I felt very exposed. I felt really exposed doing that because I was like, well, what if we don't achieve it? What if it's all bullshit?
I suppose therein lies that, you know, the older I get, the more like most of the cliches are true. But this idea that pressure is a privilege, I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. If you don't try for something that's, you have to be a stretch. I'm not a massive fan of the phrase comfort zone either, as if there's a sort of distinction between being in comfort and not in comfort, and being discomforted is good and comfort is bad. I think all that's bullshit. But I think if you can aim for something, I mean, even if it's relatively modest, and I think this is something, I mean, I think this is definitely something I see agencies get tangled up in all the time. Trying to be relatively balanced. I'd say 6 out of 10 agency CEOs I talk to, if I ask them about their vision, and that's even with a bit of preamble, so we don't get mixed up in all the language of vision and mission and values and propositions and positioning, all that noise, but just get very clear on where are you going and how will you know when you get there? Simple language. And not that many of them have a very good answer. I think a lot of them will get very numerical very quickly. Well, we want to double in size. Oh, we want to double headcount. Oh, we want to be in this continent or that continent. That's fine. Nothing wrong with it. The other kind of camp is often, well, we want the work to be amazing. We want to be the leading this. We want a long kind of queue of brilliant, ambitious, brave clients banging down our door. And there's very little crossover between those two categories. And secondly, there's very little by way of how will you know when you've done it? On what day do you pop the champagne corks and go, nice, we nailed it. So I think just very simply showing up with a point of view as a business.
They're not really interesting to this, isn't it? They're not giving themselves permission to believe that anything outside of that is possible. Because first thing I was going to say was they're not thinking hard enough about it, but that's unfair. It just is. But the truth is, I think there's something behind it, which is if we're all going to wake up tomorrow and do the same stuff, because we are, right? You know, you're going to wake up, whoever's going to wake up, and they're going to go and design something or make an ad. We're all going to do that. The only choice you've then got is what's that in service of? Because we're going to wake up and we're going to both do it because that's how we make our money. At which point you go, well, what's that really in service of? And if we're going to spend 12 hours slaving over it because creatives do, they give their life to it. What's that in service of? And is it a waste of time? Now, I'd argue it's a waste of time if all you've done is contribute to the gigabyte landfill of crap you're going to skip for your company's bottom line. And go with me on this. When we really inquired about what success at Uncommon would look like, it's a really interesting point you raise, which is when do you toast yourselves? We said, we talked about all the obvious stuff, revenue and reach and markets and blah. The thing we landed on that I couldn't get away from was the benchmark of influence and of impact and of mattering. It would be the brief, not the output. So if we were really the company in the studio we wanted to be, we would be on the receiving end of the world's most important and influential briefs of our time. That was what we, and that was when we would get the champagne out. Is when I got called for the Olympic torch, or the redesign of a store globally, or Britain's largest mental health campaign, or the cornerstone of our flag carrying airline. These would be the moments that would mark us as being the thing we dreamt we were going to be. But it's very mechanical, Robin. It's not bullshit. Like I've taken the time to sit down and map that out and go, what do I wish people would say? What magazine do I wish we were in? What do I wish our enemies would say? And then these things are very healthy, I think, but they're not easy to answer. They're the hardest brief you'll ever work on.
I think that's definitely true. I mean, I don't know, it used to be a cliche back in the day when I was kind of a young man, the idea that the agency was the agency's most important client. And that seems to have very much fallen by the wayside. I think the sort of, as a kind of card carrying member of the new business directors union, I think it's probably still alive and well within that community. But more generally, I think everyone's just so fucking busy. It's such an easy excuse. I wrote something about this a while ago, sort of being too busy to be good. And I just think it's a shit excuse.
Well, that's an industry-wide thing, by the way. And there's still that creeps into every business, by the way. Never mind the industry, that creeps into every business. The thing I'd love to speak to before, this concept of we are our most important client, that flew around at Grey. And what we meant was look after each other's health, which is very important. I'd like to talk more selfishly about what it means for a studio to say that and to believe that what we mean by that is our narrative is as important as our clients. We aren't these silent advisors in a cowl by the throne, getting paid for our whispered advice. Some are, and that's absolutely fine. But I wanted the studio to be a relevant, publicly known, admired figure, and that we would be sought out for that. It wouldn't be a problem or seen as in any way damaging. In fact, quite the opposite. That our profile, my profile, our narrative would be something that aligned with the best of our clients, and that they would come to us going, do you know what? I love the way those guys see the world. I want my version. What's wrong with that? And that's way outside of winning some new biz. That's about believing that our narrative's as important as anybody else's.
I think there's something really powerful in here. Again, it's a bit like swagger, one of those words that gets used quite a lot. And some people think it's great. Some people think it's a travesty. And the word is hustle. Now, I am not a fan of hustle as a word, because when I hear it, and you know, I'm not referring to a dictionary or anything, but when I hear it, I hear it's not working. Let's just move. Let's just push harder. Let's work harder. Let's stretch people harder. Let's sweat our assets. That's what I hear when I hear hustle. And I think it's this idea of kind of being able to have a strong view on what it is that you're trying to bring about in the world. It gives you, I think, all the permission you need not to spend your time trying to create an agency business that is appealing enough for enough clients, and hopefully good ones, that they'll pay you enough money to have a good life and do good things and be nice to your staff and all that stuff. But actually to have enough of a perspective on what you personally will find fulfillment in, so that rather than, as I say, trying to create an agency that will sell stuff, you're creating an agency that you actually want to run and you want to work in.
Yeah, I want to run, or that I want others to want to work in, that I want others to look at from afar and love what we do. And that comes with a side effect to your point about time, which is, well, if that's what we're trying to build, and that's genuinely audacious and quite hard, I don't have that long. I just don't. I don't have long enough to fuck around. I don't have long enough for bad clients. I don't have long enough for bad people. I don't have long enough to debate it with an industry lost in the past. I don't. We have this phrase, later means never. But really what that's tied to is every second we spend together with this agenda matters and counts. And so how dare we waste each other's time talking about bullshit? We can't. So every bit of output, to your point about hustle or whatever, uncommon, runs with that engine room, because everybody there knows the current state of affairs is a gift, and that we shouldn't waste it and we can't waste it. And some of the briefs we have, some of the client partners we have, some of the scale of opportunity we have is incredible, I think. And it's the stuff I dreamt of. And I feel like the pressure now in the studio is, well, are we really doing that justice? Are we making the most of it?
I was going to ask you that question actually about quite the what next question, as if life moves in neat chapters. But obviously you are expanding internationally. You've done the deal with Havas. You're getting those kinds of briefs that you dreamed of getting. And how has that impacted your definition of success?
Well, this thing I learned, which is your work's the evidence of your beliefs. So go with me on this. When I came out with the whole narrative and like, we're about this, we're building brands, well, which is whatever, the immediate response from lots of people, including people we work with, was, well, go on. And first of all, they said, well, yeah, right. And so we were lucky enough, I think, that our first bit of work for OVO Energy was so directly tied to our beliefs, to the provocation we wanted to stand for, to the disruptive type of work we wanted to make, had the speech from Get Mad in it. From it was almost an ad for Uncommon as much as it was an ad for them. And it worked for both parties. And
was that intentional, by the way?
It was undeniable. It was what it had to be, is the way I look back. It was absolutely 100% intentional. But the gag was, if you think about the focus and energy around our first piece of work, number one, it couldn't be shit. It absolutely couldn't be. And we fired two clients before we made that. But the other thing was that it should, we didn't have any other opportunities to evidence our beliefs. And so when that dropped, people said, which was the dream I had, by the way, of them saying, holy fuck, have you seen that Uncommon thing? And it taught me one thing, then, like, believe. And I'm not saying it's all really good, Robin. Other people will say that bit of work's not that good or whatever. You might not like all our work, but I'd argue it's all good. And I think it started to teach me that if you put things out there and you dream hard enough and you mechanize hard enough, other people use the word manifest, but I'm like, literally see it and work toward it, you have a far greater chance of doing something because you've built it. And so what I started to see was this work come out that was evidence of that. And I thought, well, how far can I go? How much could we believe? What could we believe is possible? How audacious could we be with that dream? And I really have learned that there aren't really any limits to that at all. And I've been humbled and buoyed and scared a bit by the profound nature of the world, which is if you just really do map it out, really do see it, architect it, and then chase it with everything you have, it will be given to you.
Curious about your why I heard anyway as resistance towards the word manifesting.
Well, I just think like some other words like hustle or whatever, it's become a little bit, I think it's human magic, man. I really do. This is weird. I've not said this shit before, but I think there is a human magic into belief and to so many of us are so afraid to write on paper what we believe we deserve and the dream of what we wish we could make. And it's really easy to say what I've just said, but it's really hard for people to write down theirs and to really, really concretely put in paper and to interrogate yourself enough and all your arrogance and all your humility and all your weakness and all your resentment to try and push it to give you something that you can actually chase that you might give a fuck about.
I mean, it's a very hackneyed cultural reference point, but it's your classic kind of red pill, blue pill moment, isn't it? I don't know, that's been appropriated by some unsavory fuckers, but the idea that you can continue to live the life you've got or you can embrace something else.
Yeah, but what I'd say, yeah, maybe, but I think there's far too much talk of go the other way, do your own thing. Well, what thing?
I suppose that's what I mean. It's not just a question of being contrary. It's a question of taking the time and trouble to examine your motivations, examine your frailties, examine the less appealing aspects of your personality and say, well, what am I going to do with this shit? Because it's true.
This. And I think really the positives of this exist in every creative leap ever made. I think that's true of everything. Thing that's really been a leap, which is it hasn't been born of some sense of comfort. What shall I do next? And someone's twiddling a moustache. It's born of a need and a push and a resentment and an inbuilt fire to react to the way things are. And I think there's this Western, and by the way, I think this is true of business and innovation in business. Spotify was born of the record industry fucking with people. Netflix was born of the drip-fed content. But it's also true of people. And I remember this Western where a guy's brother had been killed by a mob. And so the brother went on a revenge mission. And to remind himself about the power of this revenge, he dragged his brother's coffin around tied to his leg. And he does that for the whole film. But I think there are versions of that that we can go with me on this. I think we run from some of this stuff. And actually, it's the stuff that means you're going to work through the board and through the dull bits and through the hard bits because it matters more than whatever's just happened in your life. Does that make sense? So I've had moments, woman, where things have gone wrong. Something beautiful we loved has not happened, and it can honestly borderline crush you when it's yours. And a brilliant team of people have spent months doing something. And the only way it doesn't crush you is if there's a belief in a narrative bigger than that you're all still chasing.
100%. And again, I suppose we're skirting around the sense of purpose.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult topic to approach. I think, particularly go back to the point before the whole sort of tall poppies thing. If you take the time and trouble to kind of look inward and to do the personal development and just do the work and figure out what you care about and what you want in your life and what you're prepared to accept and what you're no longer prepared to accept. You know, we're very good as a species at waiting for disaster to force us to make those kinds of inquiries of ourselves. And I suppose in inverted commas, your disaster, if you like, which turned into being a gift, was the threat of legal action that stopped you working for a year. And it certainly added some momentum to the journey that you were on. So I think if we're very good at, and I don't just mean agencies, or I think just people in general, we're very good at imagining our limitations as a means of keeping us safe. And I think I see that pretty habitually in the way that agencies think about their future, as we've talked about. If you're not clear about where it is, then pretty difficult to fail then, isn't it? All you need to do is make enough money to keep the lights on and you're at least a qualified success.
Don't you think?
Go big or go home.
Well, I think so, but I sort of thought it was interesting. I used to wang on giving speeches back at Grey about trying to make work that cut through. And we'd made a couple of experiments, like things like Life Paint and things like the Angina Monologues actually earlier, which was a show that won a British Comedy Award. I learned from those and I was like, my God, I want to make more of these. These matter and go with me on this. I kept trying to give these speeches and say this stuff. And I wasn't very good at it yet about why people needed to do it. And then the skip ad button became prevalent and it started to say far louder and more concretely what I was trying to say. I think AI has come along and done that again. And I think if you're not sat in an agency or studio or not looking at this as your chance, if what you really believe, by the way, is in the power of creativity, is in the output you can create, your unique point of difference, because you hear people wang on about it on LinkedIn the whole fucking time. If what you really believe in is your power to do that, you've never had a better, more fertile springboard than what AI is going to do to this industry.
Great. On so many levels. I mean, commercially, if nothing else, but I guess you're thinking about this from a creative standpoint?
Well, yeah, because I look at it and just me believing in creativity or whatever, I believe Uncommon's secret sauce. I think the thing for sale here is the last great, most valuable thing this entire industry has, which is our act to use creativity and creative thinking to radically improve someone's business fortunes or life. And I think that that's been a point of view of ours. But now I think it's the only way for a creative business to stay alive, which is everything else is going to become machined to a point where you can no longer be that global holding group relying on assets, low-cost content, synergy, integration, all these other fucking words, because that's going to be standard. At which point you ask yourself, what do you have left of real value? What's the real magic or innovation, to use their words, in your business? And it's the same one it always has been, which is our ability to use our brains, talent, audacious ambition to reinvent their business in a way that no one else ever could, because that's always been our superpower.
Do you think we've lost that as an industry?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think we've become dependent on other bullshit, and we've built a whole industry that's dependent on that. I think AI is a savior to some degree.
Yeah. So how does that play out? That's sort of the AI factor, given that we have a very scaled, mature industry in a lot of places.
Not for long. I mean, it's going to remove 50% of it, probably. It's going to remove all the guffers that have been making money out of not that stuff. I think it will make some companies incredibly powerful. I think it will make some companies incredibly nimble in a really beautiful, visionary, radical way.
What would be an example of that, Nils?
The people that got their heads around Photoshop first. Well, no, fuck that. Actually, way before that, the people that got their heads around Adobe.
The printing press.
Right. The people that were still art working on Litho, and then the people that were starting to set adverts in Quark Express, and then the people that learned Photoshop, and then the people that learned retouching, and then the people that learned 3D modeling, and then the people that learned social and digital, and then the people that learned, you know. And what I'm saying is that there are tools that are radicalized, and there have been casualties of those things, and there have been brilliant reference point people who've embraced that and made it an amazing part of their arse. And I think it's that on a scale that we've not seen before, I think.
So when you look at our industry, Nils, and you look at the variety of agencies out there in terms of discipline and scale and geography and ownership and so on, which sort of cohort are you most optimistic will be able to really embrace AI and premiumize human intelligence in the way you thought?
The startup brands, frankly, I think the best of our industry, people ask me all the time, where's the talent going? I used to say they're getting hired by the platforms. And I think to some degree, the creative leaders of our generation have been snapped up by the platforms. And that's a travesty, I think, for our industry. But I actually think now that the best people, the most ambitious people are looking at all of these tools they have in front of them. And they're saying, I'm no longer dependent. I no longer need 12 people to go and make something happen. And they're starting brand. And, you know, it just makes me laugh that we're eulogizing people like Loewe, and they're going, look at these amazing social films from Loewe and how creative they're being. And I look at them and I just go, they're hacking AI and they're pulling low cost content together in a way that's provocative, got an idea in it, might be talked about, and they're hammering it out. And they've lost any reverence to what it means to be a premium brand because they don't give a shit about that anymore. And they're just rolling like a genuine creative entity. And I'm like, that, there's a brand like that being born every week now. And so I think the best people are embracing all of that to launch their own affairs and industries. And I think that's a really, really inspiring space.
Are we effectively talking about the creator economy?
That's a posh word. I mean, maybe. I think we're talking about a bunch of people. Like, our studio has always attracted people who really have a sense and want to learn what it means to do their own thing and to build their own brands. We build our own brands as well. I know you know that. We've got Unrest, the Accelerator, all the above. But what your own brand is, if you're talking about the creator economy, is a completely non-dependent version of events that's yours to own. And just go with me on that concept for a second. Whether it's a swimwear brand or a bottled water, you finally have a canvas for your own vision and mission and can make yourself your own drop-dead money. And the path to owning that and launching that has never been shorter.
Yeah.
And so call it that by all means. I think there's everybody in here from music artists creating an entire new world for themselves, all the way to fashion, you know, and everything in between. And I think there's a guy in the studio I currently work with who's launched a bone broth and butchery brand, right? You're like, my God, what? But he's wrapped it in all the ways you wish you could. It's a modern lifestyle brand talking about how we eat and consume. It's got a premium, beautiful look to it. And he's making that content for next to nothing himself with all his own hands and all his own tools. And then he's using all his experience to socialize it and get it out there. And like, you would have needed a horde of people to have done that even 5 years ago.
I'm super curious, kind of, if you knew what you know now and you're 21 again and you've got your entire career ahead of you, what do you do to exercise your creative ambition?
If I knew everything I know now, I'd be an artist. If I really believe then and understood then that you can make things. And I mean this in the most commercial sense of the word, by the way. I'm Team Warhol, Team Hearst here, but if I knew that you could make provocative public statements, narrative objects, whatever you want to call them, the world would feast on, enjoy, hate, debate, pass on, and then pay monolithic amounts of money for because you said that that was what it was worth. That's what I've done, dude. That's what I'd have done.
And what would be the most fulfilling thing about that career for you?
Mattering. Oh, look, I said to you, I'm needy. Yeah, I'm really needy. I want to, for a brief second, be a part of it all. Really be a part of it all. Be in the mix, man. Be in the mix. Be talked about. Be referred to. Loved or hated, it's fine, by the way. But this is what we do on behalf of our clients, I think, to some degree. Our lust, it isn't just mine. It's rooted really in, I think, most creative people's truth, which is they don't really do it for money or for a new laptop, man. They really don't. They're doing it because at some point, their obituary or gravestone might not say content solution. They do it because someone might say, fuck, have you seen that thing that Robin did? Why are you writing a book?
Good question. Well, it's funny. I had this conversation early on today. The reason I'm writing a book is like on a functional level. I want it to help me optimize my business for joy. I want it to be a valuable read for people that can't work with us for whatever reason and they get something from it. And I want it to be a useful route into working for us, for the people with us, for the people that it is the right thing for them to work with Codefinery. But more than anything else, like the honest answer, I wanted to make something I was proud of. And from that point of view, like it could tank, it could absolutely bomb, no one's interested, and I'll still know it's good.
Yep.
And I'll still know it was a good representation of what I knew, and it was written in the way I wanted it to be written, and I knew that I enjoyed doing it.
Love it. Well, that's that. I mean, that's that.
That matters to me.
Yeah, well, I think that matters to everyone, but age and wisdom and maybe whatever else, Robin has taught us that codifying that isn't something to be ashamed of. In fact, it's probably pretty healthy. Now, I don't think most people, this is weird, but most parents, most schools remotely teach you to codify your happiness or satisfaction. They don't do it, man. And I know that's a deep thing to say, but somewhere in there, my parents, you know, one of whom was a tattooist and the other was a RE teacher, somehow taught me to try to get to something. And they couldn't teach me how to codify it either, but somehow I've ended up doing it. And I just think if more of us knew that earlier, we'd be more productive. We'd make more things that mattered. And I might be completely wrong here, but when you look at nations like Sweden, do you not think that's more true of them? Probably. I look at the design system thinking. I look at the innovations. I look at the amount of companies. I look at the level of happiness. I look at the level of education. I look at the economy. And all of that, I think, is attached to the same thing. And I know this has gone somewhere else, but I think all of that's really about inquiring what it is you really need to do in the world in your brief time.
And I think the build I would put on that is being happy to give it away. I don't mean for nothing, but to put it out in the world. And yeah, charge for it for sure. But recognizing that like the most necessity is the mother of invention, right? So I remember having a deep conversation with this with a friend of mine who has a very different attitude to IP to me. And we talked about what it meant to put into a book and wanting to make it. It's not a pamphlet, it's not a bit of marketing material where if you read it and it doesn't give you shit until you pay money to get the full product. But for plenty of people, it's going to be enough. That's all they need. And the best possible inoculation I can give myself to not keep doing the same work year in, year out is to, as I say, not give it away, but to make sure that the world, I don't mean that in a pretentious sense, but that it's out, in which case I don't want to be saying the same shit day in, day out. That would bore me to tears.
That is true. But I also think we believe in publishing a lot. We do publish a lot of pamphlets and things are uncommon. We make a lot, like I've got one here. This is called There's More Where We Came From. And it is of massive worth, in my opinion. These are the collated stories, I suppose, and questions and convictions that make the studio what it is. But I stole the idea of publishing like that off of Virgil Abloh, who I've mentioned far too much, Samuel Ross, people like that. What it dawned on me is the act of publishing, and I'm sure you know this better than me, forces you again to mechanize and make concrete your beliefs or values or things you care about. The very act of doing it is incredibly, incredibly healthy. And again, it honestly increases the chance of someone somewhere else in the world noticing you, talking about you, because you've made a thing. And that sounds really simple too, but LinkedIn is not, you're not going to dredge up a 20-year-old LinkedIn post. It's not going to fucking happen.
It's true.
It's not, man. It's fucking not. And I remember seeing some guy who is very big on LinkedIn, and I won't say who, get to January again and say, this year, I've had enough of talking, I'm going to do. And I thought, oh, that's tragic. That's fucking tragic. And I thought, you know, his very first act of doing is saying he's going to stop talking and start doing. I was like, and forgive me, but I'm like, make a thing, make stuff. Make things.
You know who I'm talking. I mean, there's just so much in that. You kind of.
You know who I'm fucking talking about. I'm not going to.
you could dive into that and just swim in the joy of that, but let's not do that. I'm going to ask you one last question, Nils, and I think we've probably talked about the notion of optimism slightly obliquely from now, but let's just be really explicit about it. My sense is, as this whole show is about bringing a bit more optimism to the conversation about running an agency business. And I think when I just cast my mind back through the conversation we've had, there's been at least five or six really strong reasons why Uncommon have been successful. And I think that's what makes you such a powerful reference point for so much in the industry, is because it's very easy to say, oh, they've got this advantage or that advantage. Oh, they've got superstar creatives. Oh, they've got incredible strategies. Oh, whatever. And I think the reality is that, you know, by codifying what you've done and talking about the steps that you've taken and the intentionality that you brought to the journey that you've gone on, I think that's what makes it such an accessible story. And I genuinely, I mean, you know me, I talk about putting agencies in a market of one. I think you guys have done that incredibly successfully. And I think that is a destination that's accessible to pretty much any agency if you're willing to do the work and you're willing to back yourself. So my question to this, my last question, I suppose, to you is this, about over and above what we've said already, what else makes you optimistic about the future of agencies?
As you were talking, I had answers in my head. I'm going to answer that really differently. I think there's one thing that I've realized, and it was true of my time at Grey, and it's true of everybody's time in agencies. And I think codifying stuff's healthy, as you say, and all the above. But there's one phrase that lives at Uncommon, which I don't think most people get their heads around, which is every moment's a chance. Every moment, every meeting, every deck, every moment is a chance. And go with me on this. It sounds incredibly like, oh my God. What I mean by that is when we were at Grey and we went there, people said it was where you went to die. Okay. It was bad, but there were a core group of people there who were deluded enough and audacious enough to assume that if they simply decided to make things differently, it would be. And the way we describe it Uncommon is it's a fucking heist. This is a fucking heist. What, Jeopardy? We're not fucking around. We're not like, this isn't about a nice person contest. I don't give a shit about yoga or bake sales. This is a heist. And I mean life. And I just want people at agencies to know that if a core crew of them get together and decide to do something, they can do it and it will happen. Because energy, plans and intent and energy, the world will give you back. That is the food of the world and it gives you shit back. And so if that group of people stop fucking whinging and going to the wrong meetings and wanging on about AI, and instead they sit together and they say, okay, we're going to put a dent in this. Even if it's wrong, I bet you 20 fucking pounds that the concerted effort and energy applied and the output that they create is enough to convince anybody of the proof of having an idea and just going and doing it and changing things. And so I genuinely believe it, that every moment's a chance. And if I ever wake up and Uncommon isn't what it was or where we were trying to go, I firmly, genuinely believe we can just totally change it. We just can, because we've been proven that that's the case. And when you have that evidence, by the way, Robin, like the brother with the coffin on his leg, or more optimistically, like Kingsman, where he has all of the newspaper headlines on the days that he saved the world. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I remember it.
You can stick moments like that on the wall in your head. And what they tell you is, this is fucking possible. You did this. So now anyone and anything that tells you you can't is fucking wrong. I think that's the biggest thing anybody could remember, is they have just endless moments in which to change things. Endless.
Yeah. I think that what I take from that is it's really is the only thing that is stopping you, achieving you from doing the things that you want to do, is the belief that you can't.
Yeah. And also though, the systems, like, there is nothing as thrilling as binning the next 3.5 hours of meetings because they're just bollocks. It's just bollocks. What are they really going to do? I know you should go, but kind of fuck that. If I told you you were going to die one day and your gravestone was blank and no one knew what to write in your obituary, would you still go to those fucking meetings? Probably not.
It's fair. I mean, let's be honest, whenever anybody accidentally goes through the beginning of a Zoom meeting and says, oh, I'm so sorry, I've missed the beginning of our meeting, it's like, oh, no worries, it's fine. I did some other stuff. I had a drink of water. I talked to my wife. It's, no one ever bemoans a meeting not happening.
I'm just like, actively believe that your time is critical and that where you're going to put it matters, and then be ferocious about it and just fucking everything else can fuck off. Like, be selfish. Use your power, man. Like, anyway. That's what I believe. And I think spirit's attached to, honestly, everything good and all the change we might want to see. And I think the industry's full of that.
Beautiful. Nils, I think you're spot on. I think it's the perfect bookend to the conversation. I think there's just a shed load of positivity in this conversation. There's a shed load of taking ownership of your life and the application of your intention. And I think, without being too philosophical about it, for me, one of the lessons here is if you don't wait for people to tell you whether you can or you can't, just go on and have a go at it. And most of the time, just by virtue of committing, you'll get somewhere good. It might not be where you thought you'd get to. And I'm not saying failure is impossible. I'm hearing an awful lot of power and autonomy and self-determination around just deciding to go for it. And no one needs to have any one of 10 imagined prerequisites for success in order to make that happen. Some people come from places where it's easier. Some people come from places where it isn't. And we've all got to deal with, we've all got to play the cards we're dealt. So get on and do it. If you believe it, if you want it, then go for it. That's what I'm hearing. Perfect. Nils, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been just fascinating to hear about your story and your view of the world. And I'm sure it'll be a well-listened to episode. Appreciate it, mate.
Chat, Robin. Thank you for taking the time, mate. Thanks.
My pleasure. See you soon. Thanks for listening today. Hopefully you've got at least one really useful takeaway. If so, I'd love to hear from you. Connect with me, Robin Bond, on LinkedIn, or drop me an email at robin.bond@codefinery.com. Now, it's podcast lore that I compel you to subscribe to the show, so please do. And if you're happy to share this episode and help us reach a wider audience, thank you. I'll personally buy you a pint. Finally, if you're new to Codefinery, then here's the plug. We combine consulting sprints and executive coaching to help agencies like yours create your very own market of one. That means you can stand out, win more, and command a premium, all while attracting the best talent and really thriving in your role. So if you're curious to learn more, drop us a line by the link in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.